Hi, welcome back to Eye to Eye, a weekly podcast talk show all about passion, flow, and creativity, where we talk to people about their story and we find ourselves in them. I'm your host, Erin Holman, and my guest today is...
Lizzie Renaud.
Lizzie, I'm happy you were able to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Lizzie, welcome to Eye to Eye Podcast. I'm familiar with your work. The way I became exposed to you was as a Twitch streamer, but I know that there's so much to your creativity. You are I believe it started as just a drawing artist, which turned into tattooing, nails, Twitch streaming. Lizzie, do me a favor and tell our listeners out there about yourself in your own words.
I'm excited that you know me as a Twitch streamer, because that was a goal that I had been working on since I found out what Twitch was and saw that it was something that excited me. So that's really exciting that I have people now seeing that as part of my wheelhouse, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started out at OCAD, which is the Ontario College of Art and Design here in Toronto. I was there for drawing and painting, which then turned into me working at a tattoo shop down the street, which then turned into an apprenticeship. So then in 2009, I had been tattooing at that point for 6 years, and I opened Speakeasy Tattoo, which is a queer space in downtown Toronto. Wow. That's had an evolution of artists over time, and all of us have really evolved here, and it's become a pretty incredible space, which has then led to us installing all this tech in late 2019 with the goal to bring our tattoo shop into kind of like a cool, I don't know, cyber space, yeah. For lack of a better word.
Hey, look at what's happening in the world. Like, it was perfectly timed.
It was wild. I was texting around a friend saying, I feel like 2020 is really going to be people wanting to like have time to themselves. People are broke. They're going to like, this is a cheaper way to access entertainment. So I put this whole thing together. And then COVID happened, and I felt like an oracle. I just was like, what is happening?
Yes, like one of the precogs from Minority Report. Like, you saw it coming. The people that you work with on your Twitch, Alice in Chains, Champagne, Bombay, what an incredible group of
performers. Such talented performers, such good hosts. All very, very funny.
How long have y'all known each other? Like the whole group?
Allison, I've known, I couldn't tell you, maybe 7 or 8 years, just through drag appreciation in the city. We're both kind of weirdos. And so I think we knew each other through that. Champagne, I met through Allison and just really got to know through COVID the most. And Bombay, I met them because I judged a pageant they were in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were incredible. And then anything I've ever seen from them is, they're one of those performers that when you see live becomes one of your favorite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I sense a magnetism when they perform, you know?
Yes, like, yes.
You will look here.
Yes, exactly. And even when they were here today and we were talking about their upcoming show, they are so engaging. And when they make eye contact with you, it's just like they're really, you know, looking into you. I just really think they've got a cool, engaging energy.
Do me a favor and pass on to both Allison and Champagne, because I've seen them perform the most on the stream. They're both doing incredible. I love Champagne's dances and clothing. I wish I was so skinny. And then Allison, I'm blown away by the creativity of these filters. There's a lot of digital drag happening, and Allison stands out.
Oh, yay. That's great. I will pass that along, though. I know that they're both really proud of what they put out. And I agree. Champagne's outfits are so hot.
I'm
always like, are we going to get like banned tonight? Is somebody going to report us? Because that's a whole ass out.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm not so confident in like that aspect.
Yeah, she is very confident. She's got enough for all of us. Yeah, so... that's That's my project right now. And then I also had Pinky's Nails, which was a nail brand I started in 2012. Mm-hmm. Also another queer space that was meant to be a complete gender fuck, fun beauty space that anyone could access. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we were really successful in that because the diversity of our clientele was sometimes you almost had to laugh at the range of people that we would have in there. So
what I've seen of the Pinky's Nails, unbelievably great artistic designs. Do all of those designs come from you or is it a team? Where do those come from?
In the beginning of Pinky's, we had a larger team. I operated that space like a tattoo shop. So it was appealing for artists to come in and do nails because they actually made quite a bit of the money that they charged for their services. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, all of our aesthetic was combined and created from this group of artists. And then that started to get honed down once we started to really service the Drag Race clientele. And then we started to have certain people who were picked out for being exceptionally editorial or artistic in one way or the other. Over time, our business just really became about that. And we decided to go quite private. Mm-hmm. And now it's mostly Justin Capoletti, who was always our, I think, kind of star artist. And he does most of it now.
Wow, that is absolutely incredible. I know that you have two locations to Pinky's. Is there anything else in the works in terms of either Pinky's or Speakeasy in terms of expansion?
Okay, with the two locations of Pinky's, this is actually good Toronto trivia, is that when we opened our Pinky's, mm-hmm. we got a ton of media attention and it blew up like wildfire. And then another nail salon in Toronto called itself Pinky's without an apostrophe.
Oh.
So there's two locations of that space. And what would happen is people would book appointments with us and then show up to this Pinky's and they would be like, oh, yes, 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 you do have an appointment. Yes,
oh,
come in.
Oh, my Lord.
And then we would get all the bad reviews.
What a hot mess.
Yes, yes. So we've had several locations, but they're not the ones that are commonly found now on Google.
That because, is insane.
I know, it really stunk. Yeah, so we're Pinky's with apostrophe, and I think we've been around long enough that that's how we have most of the social media that's just very simply Pinky's Nails, so yeah.
Well, at least you lucked out in that category where honestly it really matters.
Yes.
Servicing the world versus just locally, there's a big difference.
Yeah, and I think now we work mainly with artists and just the queens. So mm-hmm. we don't really have a location anymore. I think Justin does have some of his diehard loyal clients that he's had forever now, almost 10 years at this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's all just for set and makeup kind of thing now.
Let's go into one of the main topics of the podcast, passion. Where does this drive of yours to create multiple businesses or these arts? You're like making things work for yourself. Where does that passion come from? Where did it start?
I think that that has come from childhood, from being in a place where I was not afraid to express myself and was met with a lot of praise in those moments. And was met with a lot of, and I'm sure in some ways this can be destructive, and I'm sure that it had also its toll on me, but was often met with like, you did amazing, and you can do better, and you can do better. So this kind of got bred into me in a way that I don't feel sad or upset about. It then kind of led into, in high school, getting more and more involved in clubs and filling all my time with things that really made me feel good. And I've never really been able to like drop a thing I've started. So if I have one business and I get a second business idea, it's not like I'm going to close the first one and open another one. I'm just going to start to source out new ways to do all of this. And often I have to stop myself and think, you've put too much on your plate. So I think the drive to do that much stuff comes from seeing things succeed and getting that like set that rush of like parental almost like pride, like, wow, mm-hmm. not only could you do it, but damn, you did do it better. Like, and you can probably do it better again. Like, I really believed those things that were told to me. So
it's very impressive and very inspiring.
Oh, thank you.
You know, when I started looking into your further work, by the time I found the Pinky's Nail stuff, I could hardly fathom that all of these things were yours. It's just so diverse, everything that you're doing.
I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but today when I was reorganizing some stuff for an event I'm planning, I had to repurpose my Pomeranian's web store. And I thought, I'm having to explain to people who I'm sending this link to what snackyboy.com is. And I'm thinking, how is this one more thing that I have to be like, oh yes, and I actually have like a sort of semi-famous dog and I manage their social media. And you know, like sometimes I'm like, girl, slow the fuck down.
But that dog is cute.
Like, he's really cute.
I mean, unreal, like a cartoon anime dog.
yeah. Every day, we always just sit at the house and go, look at Snacky right now, because it's unreal.
I love that. How old is Snacky?
He's 4.
Oh, man. And mm-hmm. already just like taking the world by storm.
Yeah, totally.
Can't wait to see them on season 13.
Yeah. Don't pressure them to talk about it. They signed an NDA.
Oh, you're right. I'm so dumb. We'll come back to that later. Now, Lizzie, a question for you. When's the first time that you ever drew something and first time that you can remember that it lit up for you, that this was something that you were good at and enjoyed doing?
Always. I couldn't even tell you a first memory. It's something that I always was told, wow, you're better at that than I might expect you to be. Like that was the input I would always get. And that was always my thing from kindergarten through school. I was the drawer in the class. If we went on a vacation, I would always bring along a pad of paper and a pen. That's what I would need in the car to bide the time. So that was just an always thing. But I always thought that I needed to do something that would make a lot of money and would really make me feel secure. And I got great grades throughout school. So those were all things that felt really attainable as well. So my aspirations were normally like, yeah, I want to be a doctor. I want to do those kinds of things. And then in grade 11, I took an art class for the first time and really felt a sense of like approval there. And kind of met the weirder kids, didn't have to work so hard to impress people, or it just was a lot more easygoing. And the teacher really made me feel like special in a different way. So I feel like I really started to excel in my artistic skills at about 16, 17 with that kind of support. And then it was a very last minute decision I made to go to college for art. I really upset my parents with it.
What expecting it to be when you went to school?
I don't know that I was really sure. I had always said maybe I wanted to get into some kind of surgeon kind of role or something. Like I said, I was really proficient in all my classes. So I had taken all the things to lead up to applying for sciences. And at the last minute, I just was like, nope, and didn't do it. And my parents are musicians. Mm-hmm. And I think that they knew what was happening. And I would do the same if I had a teen daughter right now who wanted to do that. I would be like, no, don't.
Life is not easy down this road.
Yeah, it's so risky and it's so unstable. And it's very cruel at times. So I get that. But yeah, luckily they let me see it through. And then that's now been my career, and I've just worked for myself forever.
That's amazing. Kudos to you. It is the dream. Now, you said you were at OCAD, and then this led to an apprenticeship. Where was the apprenticeship, and what was your first experience with giving someone a tattoo?
My apprenticeship was at a tattoo shop called New Tribe it was really popular at the time. I think it's quite popular still, actually. It's across the street from what used to be Much Music, which was our MTV. So it was a cool kind of hot spot. I had worked there for a year and a half doing the phones, and it was in 2001, so there wasn't even shop internet. We only got email, I think, until like my second year there. So dumb.
Yeah.
I was offered an apprenticeship spot there, I think, because they saw that I had drawing skills and I might be an asset. And at the time, I thought this will be a really good way to afford art supplies. Like, mm-hmm. this will pay for how expensive canvases are. And everybody was like, no, it's going to be something you do forever. I'm like, no, this will be something
you
that
don't
I just,
know. Yeah.
Yeah. And then about the first tattoo I did, it was a tiny heart on a wrist, and it was so bad. It was so bad that I like cried after. And
what's
I just
bad about it? What happened?
It was too simple of a design. I would never let an apprentice now do such a simple thing that needs to be perfect and symmetrical. And it was on a wrist bone, which is a very 3D surface. Like, I was being kind of set up not to do the best on that first one. I've learned to be a better mentor. No diss to my mentors, yeah. but I think that I've learned to be a bit better.
Threw you in the deep end where it was deceptively difficult, the piece.
Yeah, and there wasn't as much guidance as really there should have been. So,
if you can throw out even a ballpark, because you've been doing this, what, is it now 11, 12, 13 years? Something like that?
Oh, no, 17 years.
17 years. Good heavens.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Can you even estimate how many tattoos you may have done or hours you have worked?
Oh, my gosh. I wish I could. I really wish I could. Sometimes I get a sense of that because I'll buy a package of supplies and it will be like 500 machine bags, which is something you might use like three of in a tattoo. And when I go through them all, I think to myself, like, oh, shit, that is
100.
Yeah. So I don't really have any scope now because it's just gone on so long.
Mm-hmm. So it just sort of becomes a time frame in which you have worked.
Yeah. But speaking of time frames, it was surreal for COVID to be the first time in my life, not just tattooing career, but then it became like whole life that I haven't worked that long in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
For that many months. So I've never, in the 17 years, I've never not tattooed for like more than a month.
Very bizarre. I hope to see it get back more towards normal for yourself and a lot of the people who are in those types of industries, aesthetics and, you know, beauty care or, because it's so uncertain, and I can't imagine the stress that is putting upon you and, you know, your business is keeping them all going. I do applaud you for pivoting and, you know, doing what you can to stay creative.
Yeah, I feel like I had 50% a hand in things pivoting into this like stream kind of growing. And I think 50% of that was just organic luck too. Like, I feel very blessed by how organically that all happened.
What I can say as someone who has enjoyed you on Twitch, which is you do it at Speakeasy Tattoo. What I've really enjoyed is just your attitude. Honest to God, it's just the way you talk and the energy at which you are giving out to the viewers. It's very enjoyable and not manufactured.
Oh, thank you.
That's the biggest thing for me, why I keep going like, I'm tuning back in, because it's not fake. It's not trying for those views.
That means a lot to me to be seen that way, because that's how I feel very authentic when I'm speaking on my stream and talking to people. And, you know, we all have people who don't really enjoy us. But I think because I'm such like a public person, especially in my community, a lot of people feel really comfortable letting me know they don't enjoy me. And
dude.
Like, I am the troll magnet. A lot of my friends even are like, how does this always happen to you? So I just want to say that when somebody says something like that and I feel seen the way that I feel inside, that is really valuable. So thank you.
You're very, very welcome. I'll definitely still be tuning in. Back to tattooing. Besides this first one where it was less than ideal, Have there been any other large screw-ups? I'm just interested in these horror stories. What is a tattoo horror story?
Okay, first off, I've never made a spelling mistake.
Thank God.
Ever. Which, like, that's a sick track record.
Yes, it is.
So that's good. I've had spelling mistakes happen in my shop that I've had to guide people through resolving that, but not myself. The first mistake I ever made, and of course I remember it so ever so clearly, is these tattoos, you know, nautical stars.
Yeah.
They're like the go red, black, red, black. Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And there's a classic tattoo thing where you get so much into autopilot that tattooers will often color two black segments in a row instead of alternating them properly. Because, you know, you just get going and you go, okay, next section, and you start black. You just autopilot. So what you do as a tattooer is you mark the sections that you're going to tattoo with a black dot before you start coloring. Mm-hmm. And you say, like, you just do that for yourself. Of course I didn't. I was too new. And I was telling the client about this stupid mistake that some people make. I was like, oh God, and some fucking idiots just da 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 da, and then started it. And like, my client was talking, and this is how it's happened anytime I've made a mistake. My client's talking and enjoying themselves and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like starting to just like
resolve,
rip cold sweat. And like, I'm just going to shit my stomach out. Like, I feel sick so bad. So with them, I just, and this was the first way I handled it. And this is how I've handled it every time I've done it after. I've stopped. I told them exactly what just happened. I told them how I was about to fix it and that I wouldn't be charging them for today.
Wow.
There are ways to fix it if you catch your mistakes, and it's been pretty successful for me every time. Mm-hmm. And I will say that that person I did that nautical star mistake on, Robert Windrum, really lovely, lovely customer, is still a client of my tattoo shop today, 17 years later.
Phenomenal.
And has been tattooed by probably every person I've employed.
Wow.
I think it really like speaks how you handle these fuck ups and these conflicts with paying customers. You can do a good job of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you just said, it's incredible that he potentially has work from every single artist, including yourself, who has passed through that place. Mm-hmm. You know, I bet that there isn't anybody else who fits that. Or maybe there is.
No, not really. No, he really stands out as somebody who has kind of tried everybody out here and supported everybody. But we do have really loyal customers here who I've been seeing, you know, all throughout my career. So mm-hmm.
I know there's a big difference between like flash pieces and custom pieces. Now, what is a piece that you have done maybe the most? Because I know that there are those tropes. There's the feathers. There's, you know, birds flying away. There's many items that get on a lot of different people. I'm curious, mm-hmm. what you maybe have seen the most of, or yourself personally done the most of.
Small script tattoos, which I think that's a great one to have done the most of. I think that script can be classic and timeless. So luckily I would say that. There was a time, I think, where it would have been tribal really early into my career. That might have been the thing that I was doing the most. But after New Tribe, I moved on to shops that really focused on custom work. So mm-hmm. those walk-in trope kind of tattoos were sort of more less sparse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it.
So what do you find more appealing about this, the custom work? What is creating that with a client like?
I think in the beginning I felt a draw to it because I could do it. I didn't have to just use flash. So it let me, you know, sometimes you run out of ideas for what to do for your own art. And tattooing is this cool job where people are constantly giving you these really neat ideas. And then you're like, oh great, I wouldn't have thought of that. And then you draw it up. That's really satisfying. So I think that satisfied that kid in me that liked to draw so much. And yeah.
Kept it really fresh for you.
Yes, kept it fresh and just wasn't, because I will draw the same things over and over. I love the same images. I get pleasure out of creating the same images. And so when people prompt me to do new things, that's where I really grow.
Welcome to All Gay Long. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Nikki.
And this is a podcast all about open and honest conversations all day long.
All gay long. Yeah, so we're going to have chats about our lives, all things LGBTQ, and giving our often unwanted opinion on what's happening in the world right now. Follow us wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe and follow us to stay up to date on our weekly episodes.
We are All Gay Long, and we really hope you join us on this journey, and we will see you all soon. Bye!
Now where I'm at, I'm more looking for the clients, and I know this is really like entitled in a way, but I've had so many clients now who just trust me to do whatever I want. They give me a body part, and they say, go for it. I don't care. And I have done the work I am most proud of on these folks. The going forward with custom, that's really where I want it to go. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've got enough going on at the shop that soon I'll be able to afford to just have that limitation.
Yeah. So it'll be those, what are those where they just book it in advance and it's sort of, here's the body part and time frame, you know, let's work.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I would love to see that for you. Have you ever considered, again, when things are back towards, I'm not going to say normal, but, you know, once things are moving again, have you ever considered traveling and doing that sort of thing?
Tattooing?
Yeah.
Oh, I've traveled a lot to tattoo. I've tattooed all over Europe, in the UK quite a bit.
Do you make trips out of it? Which comes first, the tattoo bookings or the travel plans? How does that work?
It's always been that I've picked places, I've gone there, I've checked if I've been busy tattooing, and then I'll start to plan trips. And that looks like me posting that I'm going to go to a city, having the confidence that it's going to work out, and just grabbing my tickets and booking it. So it kind of is all happening all at the same time. But if I visit one of these places and I don't do well, I don't repeat it. I don't come back. So
you learn your lesson and you grow from it.
Yeah. Cause it can be a really huge loss. I've lost a ton of money on guest spots that did not pan out well. Yeah.
Travel expense and then loss of time that maybe would have been filled somewhere else.
Yeah, or would have been filled at home. Like you've put customers off 2 weeks and now
they moved
you could
on,
have just,
maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So that was that's a system that I kind of slowed down on, and I feel like I might do less and less. I got to a point when I was traveling so much to tattoo that I was not looking forward to it. And I was getting like upset driving to the airport sometimes.
No.
So I was like, that's really gross. Like that's a time to stop because this should be enjoyable.
Especially if it has been enjoyable.
Yes.
You know, it's like, ooh, we are out of balance and there's a reason that needs to be figured out.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that I also just don't love a lot of tattooers. It is like a very, very toxic industry that I have had extremely traumatizing experiences in. And now I go into these guest spots feeling an anxiety and this like readiness to snap at people before anything happens. It's just
a defense. It has to already be there and assumed.
Yeah, tattooers feel like a threat to me nowadays. And so I try to surround myself with different queer creatives that all just appreciate working in the same space in a way that we can sustain it and make a small profit.
Something that I have heard from tattoo artists before is sometimes knowing whether or not you're right for the job. Have you ever experienced someone approach you where you had to say no? If so, why?
I have. There are things that, oh, of course, yeah. There are things that I'm not good at. I know my weaknesses, and that feeling I was talking about of doing my first tattoo with the cold sweats and feeling so sick, that is the feeling I have when someone shows up for an appointment and I know I'm not the best person for the job. Mm. So I will do anything I can to avoid that sick feeling. And it is much easier for me to explain to a person why I can't do it than it is for me to deal with that. And also, I think I've got an excellent vocabulary of local tattooers. And I feel like part of the service that you get when you come meet me is I'll share that with you. And if I know that you are going to get the sickest dragon from Chris down the road, then that's my service as a tattooer, is making sure your body is serviced properly.
That's integrity. You know, and that shows through in your work.
Thank you.
So when was the first time you were tattooed?
When I was 18 for my birthday. I was like a little overachiever kid. And even at 18, I didn't want to disappoint my parents, who, you know, probably would have been really pissed off with me. So it was one of those things. It was, you know, if I got X grade across the board, that I would then be allowed to get this tattoo, and we decided it together. And yeah,
wow, what a fun experience.
Yeah, it was cute,
you know. And what a great way to show approval. Still, you know, it's still that encouragement, that foundation of encouragement of, you know, it's not our ideal, but if you do XYZ, we can't say no.
Yeah, I feel like this system would have not worked for a lot of people, but luckily for my parents and for me, I guess my chemistry just responds well to those kinds of goals being set. So,
something else that I like to ask people about on the show is the experience of a creative block. How do you overcome that when it happens to you? For instance, when you were talking about when you were upset with tattooing, was it that then you focus more on the nails, or how do you overcome creative blocks?
I actually don't know that I do. I think that my biggest creative blocks come from really big dips in mental health or episodes that I have.
Yeah.
And they really shut me down. And I've had times where I've been shut down for what feels like a month, 6 weeks, unable to produce, feeling like there's no point in producing, and just divorcing myself entirely of what my identity really normally feels to be. And really, honestly, the only thing that in the past that has got me out of that is time and waiting it out.
Yeah.
And that became too hard for me to cope with. And I started to feel like it was not really normal, or whatever word we want to use here.
It is. I promise. It really is. There's one of two ways that I have found a lot of artists can either find a reason, like a new reason to be passionate about the work, and then they can push forward and produce. Or the other thing is being kind and prioritizing yourself, stepping away from the work and just resetting. And yes, the only thing that does that is time.
Yeah.
When you do the stepping away part.
I felt in a lot of these times that it was starting to feel lower and lower and lower, and really unable to create in like a more whole and consuming feeling way. So actually during COVID, it put me in such a place I had to address it and looked at my mental health for the first time. So it's interesting you bring up these creative blocks, because that was a big part of me realizing that I had a lot of undiagnosed stuff happening. Mm. And I started taking care of myself, and I've been such a powerhouse in the last month because I'm trusting medication and I'm trusting help. And
I'm getting chills. Like, congratulations for doing that.
I'm so proud of myself because I'm a person who was like, I've been paralyzed to help myself for a very long time. And now that I have, you like can't stop me. I've got, now I've got a doctor and, you know, I'm like going to get my license. I'm just like, oh shit, time to, you know, take care of everything. So,
yeah.
So through creative blocks, it, like through not being creative, I really realized how not myself I was feeling like.
Oh my goodness, right? You know, we get so caught up in the keeping up with whatever practices we have gotten ourselves into, our habits. I think one of the silver linings of this COVID was the disruption of habits that no longer necessarily serve the highest good for ourselves.
Oh, that's an excellent way to put it. We got to
break it down and be like, I hate it all, throw it away. For myself, something that my partner and I are working on, we're working on this podcast and we're getting ready to launch our own clothing company. By the time this episode comes out, it will be up. It's called I Light Hue. And the reason behind it is these are ideas that have been formulating for, honestly, in my brain, some of them for 10 years. And I've never known what to do with them or how to channel them. What I'm finding now during these COVID times is a reluctancy to return. I don't want to return to what our normal was. I hated it. I was unhappy and it was not the healthiest for me. I want to say goodbye to a 40-hour work week working for someone else. I'm ready to, you know, I'll work 20 hours a week for somebody. And then, you know, that rest of my time is my personal time and then my own investing in my businesses.
Yeah.
Because there's just no... there's no reason, there's no benefit that I'm getting in the long run from just working for somebody else.
I love that word you use for it, the disruption. Mm-hmm. I love that it made everybody, it made the system stop into such like a screeching halt that everybody had this look in for a second. Like we weren't running on the same hamster wheel. And I feel so dumb saying this. It's like that Kylie Jenner quote of 2017 or whatever being the year of realizing things.
Yes.
But I feel like during COVID, everybody realized things, you know?
Absolutely.
Everybody got this really in-depth look into the things they actually hate, but have not had the time to realize they hated it.
Yeah, nor enough time where they could actually do something about it.
Yeah.
You know, other than like... punch in that clock, be there on time and fulfill my obligations, blah, blah, blah. You know,
And we had in Canada, the benefit from the government that was $2,000 every 4 weeks throughout all of COVID. And a lot of performers, I mean, it's a whole political thing that obviously won't get into, but a lot of performers, that's the most money that they've ever seen. It was a really special time that a lot of people were able to invest in themselves in a way they haven't been able to and like propel these projects that they have wanted to for a long time. So a lot of cool things are coming from that.
It's very true. And throughout history, there is this pattern that exists where things collapse and then there's the Renaissance, you know, the Dark Age, Renaissance. And even in America, 100 years ago, we had our Depression, but then Industrial Revolution right after. And that is what happens. We crumble, but then there are those creative energies who, well, will not be held down. We will persevere, adapt, pivot, change, and keep going. Is there anything else that you want to share either about work that's upcoming? This would be a great time to share your social media for people to follow you too. But,
sure.
We'd like to hear about what you're creating or, you know.
Well, the Speakeasy Tattoo channel on Twitch has a new streamer that's going to be joining and doing Monday night shows.
Yes.
Did you watch the week we had Bombay and she did the Call Me Fracker video?
Yes.
Yeah. Bombay is going to do a whole show now.
Oh, thank goodness.
So won over by her and her work. And she's so technologically capable. Yes, totally. Yeah. So I feel like having her have access to all the stuff I've invested in here is going to be super cool. So that's something I'm excited about at twitch.tv/speakeasytattoo. I also am really passionate about my housewives stream that I do, which is twitch.tv/sipandsee. It's a weekly Sunday show where we really deep dive the fine minutia of housewives franchises.
Oh, it's incredible. Which, all right, I'm not very experienced in those housewife franchises. So as someone who only knows the highlights of them, Lisa Rinna, NeNe Leakes, you know, I have my favorite ones that I know of. Where should I start? Which season is quintessential?
We have a standard recommendation for a starter one because it's hot mess. It's the one where when people watch it, they're like, how have I slept on this so long? So it's Real Housewives of Sydney. Mm-hmm. It's one season. They did not get any more. And there's such heinous behavior through the whole thing that it will really get you excited for other kinds of housewives. So that's a great one. But yeah, other than that, my social media, I'm mostly available on Instagram, and that's at Lizzie Tattoo, and it's Lizzie with an I-E, not a Y.
Perfect, perfect. All right, so we are moving into our final section of things, and that is just passions lately.
Oh.
We were already starting to touch on it right there, but Lizzie, what are you passionate about lately? What's doing it for you?
Lately, I'm really passionate about making merch for myself for the first time.
Me too.
Oh, yes. Yay. It's like I was saying earlier, this new mental health state I'm in has seen me finishing things and not leaving all these awesome sketches around that I just feel, again, paralyzed against finishing. I just can't do anything about them. So now that I'm finishing all these t-shirt designs and stuff, I can't stop getting it. And I've got all these cute packages together. And yeah, I feel like I'm leveling up in that area.
Congratulations. So that's one thing. I think that is super, super thrilling. Yeah, that's exactly one of the reasons we're launching our apparel brand as well. One of the big reasons that I'm doing it is for my podcast merchandise, you know, to be able to put up official stuff for that.
Are you buying your merch outright? Like, are you having it made and buying it? Or are you going to do third party? No,
we're going to do third party. So that way it's only made to order.
Mm-hmm. That's a good, safe way to do it.
Yeah. And just reducing cost overhead. You know, what if one shirt just doesn't sell? You know, I don't want 50 of them.
I've done this. I've made t-shirts and been like, oh, work. Everyone's going to love these. And they sit here for years and I don't sell any. So.
And then you just look at them and you just get resentful, you know?
Yeah. You end up giving them away to clients as like almost like a business card. And it is really good. They love it. But for the tattoo shop, I actually always buy them outright and try to profit as much as I can. But for everything else,
At doing that for, there's a specific section of some of the shirts that we're coming out with that I think would do very well in some stores locally. And so we're just going to start with those and just sort of feel the waters, maybe contact bigger people for that later down the line.
Yeah.
And then just one final question for the podcast.
Oh, I can't believe it's over.
I know. Like, it's crazy, but it's literally been almost like an hour.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I know. It's just been very enjoyable.
Same.
Final question for the podcast. Lizzie, what is the most recent thing that has happened to you that has made you purely happy?
The thing that's made me purely happy has been reconnecting with the Drag Race girls that I used to work with, with Pinkies, and having them be so supportive to help me advance my new project, which is streaming. They've joined me and my host on the stream. They've wanted no money for it across the board. The generosity has been out of this world. And it has really filled me up and made me feel special again. So I love it.
Fantastic. And again, you can catch that at twitch.tv/speakeasytattoo. That's every Thursday and Friday evenings.
Well, this Friday we've got our Stacey Lane fundraiser, but I don't know. Fridays we're kind of deciding on right now. I feel like maybe a couple of us could use a little break for a bit. So we'll see.
Definitely. I mean, honest to God, did you see they posted about the Netherlands Drag Race like today?
Jesus Christ.
And I read an article with the other producers, you know, from Drag Race. They already have 7 other international versions in the works. It's too many.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much because we do want to know them all. But here I am saying it's too much, and I watched literally like 18 Housewives shows. So what you know, am I talking about?
What's too much?
Exactly.
Well, I'll tell you what has not been too much. Our time together on the podcast.
Oh, good segue. That was amazing.
I'm a professional.
Professional.
No, seriously. Thank you so much for joining me on Eye to Eye today, Lizzie Renault.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for being here with us. Now go outside. We'll be here and gayer when you get back. This episode of Eye to Eye was edited by Dylan Newman and the theme song written and performed by Emily Easley. Make sure to rate and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy podcasts today.